bit of a, I guess a longer mahalich. It's not that long, but it's just kind of something that, it's actually the first time I want to talk about anyway, so it makes sense to start there. But I think it's a very nice idea, and just brings a lot of different things in the Seder together. The question is always asked about karpas. Why it is that we eat karpas at the Seder. So the simple answer is because we're doing things to be different. And it was strange to start a meal with a vegetable dip. And therefore, the whole purpose of it, even though there's no halachic significance of its place, even though it's given one of the sign, you know, one of the steps of the Seder, but there's no reason to have karpas there. So therefore, they generally assume, it's assumed that it's there just to make the children ask questions. But there are those who say that karpas is for a completely different purpose. And that is that karpas, if you look by the story of Yosef, when Yosef was sold by his brothers, and when it describes Yosef's coat, so one of the colors in Yosef's coat was karpas. We find karpas also in Megillas Esther. That one of the colors in the first parak, when it's describing the party, Chur Karpas of the Chelef, it talks about the color karpas. So karpas was obviously a color, and it was one of the colors of Yosef's coat. And that's why, I think it's Yerushalmi, that says, or somewhere it says, forgive me, I didn't have a chance to look that up, where it says that the reason why we dip the karpas is to remember the story of Mechiras Yosef. Just as they dipped his coat, which had karpas in it, they dipped it into the blood and brought it to Yaakov, so too we dip the karpas. The obvious question is, what does Yosef have to do with this story? I know he was the vehicle to get us down there, but still, that's really insignificant, basically, for the story. And if it was important, then, talk about it. But why is it important to mention Yosef at the beginning of the story? That's question number one. Question number two is, we begin Magid with Halach Ma'anya. Right? That's the first thing we do as part of Ask Magid. And the question is always asked. We know the second line of Halach Ma'anya is, Kol Dichven Yesev Yechel, Kol Ditzrach Yesev Yiftach. Anybody who's hungry, come and eat. Anybody who needs, come and have the Korban Pesach with us. What are we inviting people after we make Kiddush? Right? We already made Kiddush. We've already sat down. Everybody's got a seat around the table. And now we're inviting people? If you put this before Kadesh, I understand. Although still there are issues, because truthfully, you can't invite somebody to be a part of your Korban Pesach after it's already brought. But that's a separate issue. But what's the point of inviting somebody to your table? How would you feel? Like, well, we made Kiddush already, but you're welcome to join us. And anyway, why on Pesach are we inviting everybody to our meal? We don't do this on Sukkot. It would have made more sense. We're sitting outside already in the Sukkah, so scream out, Kol Dichven Yesev Yechel, Kol Ditzrach Yesev Yiftach. Why is it on Pesach we invite everybody to our meal? So the answer is, if you look in the story of Yaakov, when Yaakov, it comes up twice. It comes up twice. First, when Rivka comes to Yaakov and says, I heard that your father Yitzchak is going to give brachos to Esav, so she says, I want you to go and get the brachos. And Yaakov says, but I'm worried that if he finds out that it's me and that I'm deceiving him, that he'll curse me. So Rivka answers, Alai kilas rabini. Right, all the curses will be upon me. Right, and they darshan on Alai. The three tsaros that Yaakov faced in his life were Esav, because Esav wanted to kill him, Lavan, who wanted to make him an idol worshiper, and Yosef, Mechiras Yosef. So Alai kilatcha b'nei, Rivka says, don't worry, all the tsaros will come on me, not on you. The problem is that didn't happen, because when the brothers went down to Egypt and to buy food, when Yosef was already down there, he was already the viceroy of Egypt, and the brothers go down there to buy food, and they end up returning without Shimon. And now they come to Yaakov and they say, if we're going to go back down, we need to bring Binyamin. So Yaakov answers them, Alai hayu chulana. Right? All of the things already befell me. I can't lose Binyamin also. And the darshan, Alai hayu chulana, Esav, Lavan, Yosef, they all already happened to me. I can't also lose Binyamin.
What about Dina? That wasn't considered one of them?
So, I mean, that was certainly, you know, not a highlight of his life, but, you know, she was...
His daughter's
daughter. No, she was raped. I mean, in the end, it was a tsaras. It was
she's still alive. Right.
But she was alive. It wasn't, his life wasn't endangered. She suffered, and I imagine he suffered along with her. But, you know, that was a different level of suffering. So, those are the three sufferings of Yaakov. We know that we are Bnei Yaakov, we're Bnei Yisrael. So, Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. Whatever Yaakov went through, whatever the Avos went through, we go through the same thing. Right? Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. So, we also suffered through Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. How? So, Esav represents the physical threat of destruction. Right? Esav wanted to physically destroy Yaakov, he wanted to kill him. He chased them. Even when he met up with him, Yaakov was scared for his life. Esav wanted to destroy Yaakov. He represents the physical threat to Yaakov and the physical threat to the Jewish people. Lavan is the spiritual threat to the Jewish people, as it was to Yaakov. Lavan wanted that Yaakov would just become, right, Banai, yeah, your children are my children. And he wants, hey, we're all good there. Your children are mine. You know, he wanted him to just join the family and become an Ovid Avodah Zarah. And that was the spiritual threat, is represented by Lavan. Yosef is the internal threat. Yosef represents the threat of the internal strife, which we see what happened in the time of Yosef. That's how Yosef ended up in Mitzrayim, because of the internal fighting, the sinna, the hatred that was involved in the between the brothers. So we mention our physical threat. We mentioned that in the Haggadah Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves in Mitzrayim. Vayotzeinu Misham, and we got out. We were saved. We mention Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. We mentioned that we were idol worshippers. Ve'achshav Kervanu Hamakom, and now Hashem brought us close. Lavodaso, to his service. What we don't mention at the Seder is Yosef. Right? What we don't mention, we mention the physical threat, we mention the spiritual threat, and we mention the physical redemption, and we mention the spiritual redemption, but we don't talk about the tzara of Yosef. And therefore, in the beginning of the Seder, we mention Yosef in the Karpas. Because unfortunately, Yosef is the one that we still have not overcome. We know that there are a number of things that we do, right? We eat the egg at the Seder. So there's a whole discussion, why is that? Why do we eat the egg at the Seder? So generally we assume it's because Tisha B'Av falls out on the same night as the first night of Pesach every year. It's always the same, whatever the first night of Pesach is, that'll be Tisha B'Av that year. So Tisha B'Av is...
Which day of the week?
That day of the week, yeah. So the Tisha B'Av is Avelus. We eat an egg to remember the Avelus. So there's all Rav Matatiel Solomon, who's the Mashgiach in Lakewood, has a very beautiful explanation about the connection as to why on the Seder night we talk about Tisha B'Av. And basically the idea is that Tisha B'Av, we know that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for Sinas Finam, because of the hatred amongst the Jewish people. And the Gemara says that any generation that the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt in, it's as though they destroyed it. Because it means that they're still guilty of, we are still guilty of that sin that caused its destruction. So, which means that nowadays we're still suffering from the same tzara, from the tzara of Yosef, that doesn't seem to be mentioned in the Haggadah, therefore we start with Karpas. Karpas to remind us that we're still living through Yosef. We haven't even gotten out of Yosef. But how do we get out? How are we misaken Yosef? Halach ma'anya diachalu avasana, the Ara de Mitzrayim. On this night that we remember the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate, so on tonight we want not only to celebrate the redemption of the past, we want to celebrate and look forward and daven for the redemption of the future. Therefore, we invite everybody to our meal. Therefore, kol dichvin yeseh v'yochol. Doesn't matter who. I know it's not the best time, but come and eat. Therefore, we're reminded of our goal, that nowadays, what are we trying to still work on? What are we trying to still overcome? Yosef, the tzara of Yosef, of the internal strife that's befallen the Jewish people. And unfortunately, we can't figure out how to get past. So the beginning of the Seder, when we say we're going to celebrate the bread of affliction from Mitzrayim, and we know what we need to accomplish, is called open our homes and invite all of the Jews in. To open ourselves and connect with all of the other people. Kol dichven yesei v'yechol, kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. And if so, and if we can do that, then hashta hacha, then here, this year, v'loshana haba v'arad Yisrael. Then next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashta avdei, now we're slaves, we're still in Golus, v'loshana haba b'nei chorin. Next year we'll be b'nei chorin. Because otherwise, what do you mean b'nei chorin, v'loshana haba? We're talking about Yerushalayim now. Because here is where we set out what our goals are for the night, which is also why at the end of the Seder, hold on, at the end of the Seder, what do we end? We say Hallel, after Hallel, Nirtza. How does Nirtza start? Chasal Seder Pesach. We finished. We did it, Hashem, you should enjoy our Seder. And immediately afterwards we say, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. That's why, that's the closing. And then we have those piyutim at the end, the extra songs at the end, but that's why we end L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. Because now that we've done our Seder, and we celebrate the past, and we're so excited about the redemption, so now we say, and we understand what we need to do for this upcoming year, so that we can celebrate another redemption of L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. Yes?
So basically, we're still suffering the internal strife among the Jews.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what seems to be. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. And as long as we're not correcting that mistake, it seems to be the Achilles heel.
What about the question of why it's after Kiddush?
Why is it after Kiddush? Because it doesn't really matter. It's not really an invitation. It's more telling us what we need to do. It's not. We don't expect anybody to be walking by. We don't even go to our door. We open the door for Eliyahu, right? For Shvo Chamascha. We don't go to the door and say, anybody walking by who needs a meal still, they can come in. It's more of just a message telling us, this is, we're celebrating, but this is what we need to do. This is what we need to do. The way someone said it to me was, it's like a mission statement. Like a mission statement. Anyway, that's the, just one addition, because I added this later. That's why I forgot it. That's why Yachat comes right after Karpas. Right? Because what's Yachat?
Split.
You take the middle matzah, which is the core, and you split it in half. To tell us that the reason why Karpas, we still have it in Yachat. That we still have this break. That the middle, the core of the core, is that we're still broken, that we're still not united as one, and then we say halach ma'anya, and we go straight into kol dichven kol ditzrich. One addition. Okay, now the other ones are a little bit shorter. You know, the Seder of the Great Torah. Let's see. I'm going to skip another one that I had in halach ma'anya. I think that's enough to talk about halach ma'anya. I had two more on halach ma'anya. Okay, we'll talk about that next year. Remind me. There's enough about halach ma'anya. in some haggadahs before ma'anishtana, it says kan haben shoel es aviv. Here the child asks his father. So Rav Aaron Mikarlin, who is the Rebbe of Karlin, he explains that it's not referring to a child, our children, but it's referring to the Jewish people as children. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the father. And it's not that here's the child asks the father the following four questions, but it's that here is the night of Pesach is a night of questions. It's a night of questions, answers. So just as the children are all, we ask them to ask questions, or we push them to ask questions, we welcome their questions, on the night of the Seder also is a time for a person to ask questions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, short. Manishtana. Okay, The big question about Manishtana is that how does a child know to ask these four questions before they happen? Right?
Cool. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Chametz u'Matzah, you can say he sees the matzah on the table. Maror we haven't eaten yet. We only dipped once, not twice. We lean for Kiddush, but he doesn't know, you know, he shouldn't know if this is the child's first time at the Seder, and you know, he didn't learn it all in school already, then he shouldn't yet know what the questions are. So how is it that he's answering the questions already? So the answer is because there are basically two dinim. And the Rav Soloveitchik writes this idea, basically, that there are two different dinim of asking questions on the night of Pesach, and this is where we were talking about what the Seder is like. This is where the other whole other mahalach of you know, going out, I guess you could say, outside the box a little bit and making it, you know, livening it up a little bit comes in. The Rambam in Perek Ches of Chametz u'Matzah talks about Seder Asiyas Mitzvos Elu Kachi. Right, this is the order of doing a Seder. So he says, first you drink the first cup, and then you say Pri Adama on the Karpas. And then when he gets to Magid, he says the Omer Hakore, oh sorry, Mosgen Hakos Sheni, and the he fills up the second cup, the Kan HaBen Shoel, and here the child asks the Omer Hakore Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. Here the child asks, and the one reading it says Manishtana halayla hazem yikol halaylos. What's strange about that?
The kid's supposed to be asking.
The kid's asking. Who's the one reading asking?
Right.
So Rav Soloveitchik explains, and then in Perek Zion also he explains, so keep that for a moment. He says, you need to make changes in the night. Kadesha yiru habanu v'yish alu v'yomru ma nishtana halayla zemikol halaylos. So, here he says the child is asking, and in Perek Ches he says that the one reading asks. So, Rav Soloveitchik explains that the Rambam means is that there are questions that we ask at the Seder that we read, and really they could be read by anybody. The child asking questions is about making changes to make the child ask questions. Now, these four questions are not necessarily supposed to be the child's questions. These are the questions that are introduced when you start to read the Haggadah. Hakore Omer, the one asking, the one reading, reads these four questions. But the questions of the child are based on different things that you do that are to elicit questions. And they tell stories about different rabbanim who at their Seder would do different things, certain things differently to make the child ask questions. You know, something strange, something funny, just to open the child up, just to get him to start talking. Why are we doing that? Why are we doing this? And some of them are not fit, don't fit, they're not the next step of the Seder, but they're just put in. And, you know, so that's why, yes, it's nice to have divrei Torah at the Seder, but, you know, one of the main focus of the Seder is truly Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and it's the retelling the story for the children. So the more that you can engage the children, the better. So it's not always through Divrei Torah. Divrei Torah are nice for the adults to talk about Divrei Torah, but you know, sometimes you have to get a little creative.
So then why do the children end up asking Manishtana nowadays, I guess?
Well,
is that,
you know,
according to...
No, because...
The reader is supposed to ask these questions, and
yeah,
why are kids... Historically, you can go any piece of theater, the kid is the one that's going to ask the question.
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly the Lashon of the Mishnah. It could be based on the Lashon of the Mishnah in Sachem. I don't remember. The Mishnah in Sachem talks about the four questions, and it could be that it says that the child asks. So it makes sense that the child is asking the questions, because we do want them to ask questions. But I don't remember the exact Lashon of the Mishnah. It could be based on the mission.
Right, the fact that they're asking the question, but why specifically if we're saying that...
Because if they don't know how... Because I think the mission says if they don't know any questions to ask, so
they
ask
the Mishnah.
Right. What? It's a good introduction, just to ask questions, to have an idea of asking questions. The question still stands, how would they know what to ask unless we tell them what to ask?
Yeah, I mean, the placement of the question is funny.
Yeah, but that's there. So the Mishnah tells us that that's at the beginning of Magid.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned last year, actually, I did notice this. Halach Ma'ani is a later addition, right? Halach Ma'anya was a later edition, which is part of the reason why it's written in Aramaic, is because it was a later edition in Golos. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the matzah didn't play as integral a role, as central a role, we'll say, as it does now. Now the whole Seder is about the matzah. We're uncovering. And we even, as the Afikoman, we eat more matzah. Right? The whole Seder is about the matzah. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't about the matzah, it was about the Korban Pesach. So, you know, that once that we no longer had a Korban Pesach, so we added Halach Ma'anya to kind of get started in the right direction. It would also make sense, you know, it would fit very nicely with what I started with.
Yeah,
that's why they added the Kol Dichfin, Kol Ditzrich, after the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. So I don't remember after which destruction the Halach Ma'anya was added. But I would imagine after the second Beis HaMikdash. Well, of course, yes. Because the whole Haggadah was the time of the Tanaim. Anyway, moving right along. I may say this every year. I don't remember, so you'll bear with me. It's a brief one. It's just the obvious question that's always asked, and it's worthwhile to mention. You know, after that we tell the story of we say Avadim Hayinu, and then we say Afilu Kulanu Chafamim Kulanu Nevonim Kulanu Zakenim, even if we were all righteous and full of wisdom and we knew everything and elder, we would still be obligated to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the question is always asked, why would you think not? Right, it's like saying, well, you know, even though someone's a Talmid Chacham, they still have to listen to Kriyas HaTorah on Monday and Thursday, right? You know, or they still have to learn. They still have to say Kriyas Shema every day. They still have to learn Torah. Why would you think they wouldn't be obligated to mitzvah just because they know the story already? So there's the fundamental distinction between Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The difference between the daily obligation to remember the story of leaving Egypt and the story of and the obligation on at the Seder night of retelling the story, and there are, you know, specific differences. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and the Talmud write out three or four differences. But leaving that aside, Rav Asher Weiss, who is a great Rav in Yerushalayim, is a great Talmud Chacham, one of the leading posek in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Asher Weiss has a very beautiful way of explaining the difference between the two. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah sichli. It's you know, that a person should understand and remember and have the knowledge of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the mitzvahs of the Seder of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is not only about our minds, but Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is about creating a feeling. At the night of the Seder, we're supposed to try to create a feeling of feeling the experience of the exodus from Mitzrayim. And therefore, the Havamina is, if the whole purpose of the mitzvah is just that I should know the story, I should have the knowledge of the story, so then you can understand why there would be a Havamina that maybe they shouldn't have to. These rabbis shouldn't have to. They know the story already. But now, comes along the Haggadah and says, no, the purpose is not to know the story. The purpose is to feel the story. And that's why we have all these things that we do, derech cheres. We lean, we drink, we all these things that we do that are to create a feeling. It's trying to be ma'orah the leiv. It's trying to awaken the heart of a person at the Seder that they should have a feeling, that they feel like they are the one, that we are the ones who are free. I'll mention this now because it's connected, even though it's much later. Hallel. There's a big question about Hallel at the Seder. Why is it that it's broken up? Right, it's a strange thing to break up Hallel. Right, it's like making Kiddush in the middle of Hallel, and you know, on the Pesach morning or on Rosh Chodesh. It's like, oh, okay, time out. You know, halftime. Let's go have a meal. Let's go have breakfast and shul. Right? It's not heard of.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I like it.
But it's on our
table.
It's unheard of to have a meal. It's not just we take a break, we have a whole meal. We carry on with a whole meal. Plus, we sit down. Hallel, we always say standing up. You have to stand up during Hallel. Why is it that we sit down? And there are a number of other questions about Hallel. You know, it's strange. We throw in some extra Pirkei Tehillim at the end. We say Hallel HaGadol of Hodu Lashem Kito Kilom Chasto. So, what does the Hallel at Leil HaSeder? So the Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who is Rav Soloveitchik's uncle, the Rav's uncle, the Rav's brother, his father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, so his brother, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who was known as the Brisker Rav. Those are Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's, two of his sons, the Brisker Rav and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came to America and had Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. That the Brisker Rav, now the whole Brisker dynasty in Eretz Yisrael, is from the Brisker Rav's family. So all Soloveitchik, the Soloveitchik family tree. Anyway, the Brisker Rav explains that there are two different types of Hallel, because it's a statement of Rav Haigon, one of the Gaonim. Rav Haigon writes that we don't make a bracha on Hallel at the Seder because we are not reading it as, we are not saying it as a kriya, but we are saying it as a song. What does that mean, that we're not reading it, we're singing it? What it means is that there are two different types of Hallel. There's the Hallel of kriya. No, when we can see Hallel of reading it, we can say on somebody else's miracle, right? So normally when we say Hallel, we're reading Hallel, like Likro es Hallel. The bracha is Likro es Hallel because it's Kriya es Hallel. We're reading Hallel. We're commemorating some miracle that happened, whether it's Pesach, whether it's Sukkot, whether it's Shavuot, any holiday that we're commemorating, Hanukkah, Rosh Chodesh, is a minhag. But all of the all of the Hallel is a commemoration, but Hallel of the Seder is completely different. Hallel of the Seder is a shira. It's a song. It's supposed to feel as though it was just flowing from our hearts, that we can't hold ourselves back. The same way the Jewish people just sang at Kriyas Yamsuf, that it was just off the cuff, pure spirit, pure emotion of joy, singing out the praises of Hashem. So that's what the Hallel of Leil HaSeder is supposed to be. If so, we understand why there's a meal in the middle, because we're celebrating our miracle. How do we celebrate our miracle best? We have a suda. We have a suda. So we can't have bagels. We have matzah. Right? What better than matzah? But we have a suda, and the suda is a suda's hodah. It's the Suda of Shulchan Orech, is like a Suda Soda, that we're celebrating this great miracle that just happened to us. Which is why, right before we start Hallel, we say, Bechol Dor Vador Chayav Adam Liros Es Atmo K'ilu Hu Yatzim Yitzrayim. It's a quote from the Mishnah. In every generation, a person is obligated to view himself as though he was taken out of Egypt. And then immediately after that, the next paragraph is Lefichach. Therefore, Anachnu Chayavim Lahodos Lahal. Therefore, we need to praise you, and we've gone straight into Hallel. So you see that it's the natural, flow of we view ourselves as though we were just taken out of Egypt, and now we burst forth with song. And that type of Hallel doesn't play by the same rules as the Hallel that we know it.
So why Hallel? Let's say Asher Shira.
We do.
Say Asher Shira. You say Adi Asher, and then we say all of the right.
We don't say Adi Asher.
No,
it's the only time you say Moshe's name.
So I mean, Moshe.
We don't say
Adi Asher.
We
don't say Adi Asher. We say that Amin Hashem Moshe Avdo. We don't say Adi Asher. There's a whole discussion about why not. We don't really talk about Kriyas Yamsuf by the Seder.
No, we do. We're talking about the plague.
No, in Dayenu we mention Kriyas Yamsuf.
Can we mention the place we're talking about?
Yeah, that there are 50 here, 250 there. Yeah, Al Hayam, but that's not as much of a direct. You're right. So what was the question again?
Why not Az Yashir instead of Hallel?
Why not Az Yashir instead of Hallel? Because Az Yashir would be singing their praises. Hallel is the natural song over a miracle.
Who's their praises?
The people from the Midbar. That was their words. Hallel, as a song, is the quote-unquote natural song of thanks, of praise. So it would just be but you're right, if we were to come up with our own Az Yashir. It's a good question. Yeah, that's Shira Chadasha. The Nomar Lefan of Shira Chadasha. That's what the Shira Chadasha is saying. That's really referring to the Gula Shlema. That's the Shira Chadasha then, but it's a similar idea. Okay, then we'll move to What?
Why was the whole thing with the 50, why was it important?
Yeah, it's a good question.
What?
I don't have a good explanation of it. Next year, okay,
well,
remind
if you
me.
It this way, you have 250
yeah,
bucks.
Yeah. It says 10, to it was 10 there, then it was 50, if it was 40. The more the merrier. No, the reason why it's good for us to have the more
right.
is because the Pasuk says that any sickness that happened to Mitzrayim won't happen to us.
So
the more the merrier. I don't know. I don't have a good explanation of that. I don't have a good explanation of that. Whatever. I have one other thing I don't have a good explanation for. So I'll have to work on it. Last year we had a whole long talk about Ben Zoma and the Chachamim, if you remember. About the Nachash, that we knew. How do we know that the Nachash wasn't going to? I don't know if you remember from last year. That was also something I never had a good explanation for. So last year we had a whole long explanation. But the Nachash wouldn't be, the Gruss said the Nachash would get his legs back or wouldn't get his legs back.
Right.
It was telling him about this machlokas. It was hard to understand the coal, based on the word coal, whether the Nachash would get his legs back on Mashiach or not. Anyway, so we won't go to that. So we go to Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasam Torah, La'amu Yisrael, Baruch Hu, and Keneged Arba Banim Divra Torah. So, I was told that in the Mos Haggadah, which is an artist, a famous artist, the Haggadah, in his Haggadah, that in the picture that he makes for this page, he has, if you look, it's Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, two Baruchs, Baruch Shenasam Torah L'Amu Yisrael, Baruch Hu, four Baruchs, right? Four times it says Baruch. In the Mos Haggadah, in the picture of the four sons, he has a Baruch on top of each one. Right, these four baruchs he writes on top of each of the sons.
Okay.
Why? To tell you that before you come to educate a child, no matter whether he's a chacham, a rasha, a tam, or a she'eino yodea lishol, you need to see him as baruch. Not you. But you need to see him as blessed. Yeah. You need to see him as blessed. You need to see him as a child who's full of bracha. Even if he's a rasha. You need to see in him, if you want to educate him, it's really important. I like it, because it's important for educators. I'm an educator. But you need to see in every child that he's baruch. It doesn't matter what his actions are. It doesn't matter what he seems to be, and what he sounds like a chacham, whether he sounds like a rosh, or he sounds like a tamish, in him, you see baruch. Him or her. You see baruch. You see bracha. You see potential. You see promise. You see a Jewish neshama, and therefore he puts it on top. I did see that there are those who make a whole drasha about how Baruch HaMakom is for the Chacham, Baruch Hu is for the Rasha, Baruch Shenasam Torah La'amo Yisrael is for the Tam, and the Baruch Hu is Sheino the Deir Lishol. I didn't have a chance to go through the whole thing and work the whole thing out. Otherwise, I would have shared. Yes, the Rasha and the Sheino the Deir Lishol. So maybe for next year we'll talk about why it is that each of those corresponds. Something to think about the Seder, to how each one corresponds to the.
Makes sense because if you try bringing Russia back, it's understanding has some kind of benefit.
Of course.
Help.
Of course. You know, they say that. I think the Lubavitcher Rebbe says it, the fifth son is the one who's not even there. Right? The fifth child, the fifth son is not even at the Seder. So in his Haggadah he mentions how you have to think about the fifth son, the one who's not there.
Daughters,
sons, daughters, the same thing. Just chose son. I guess it flows better. Okay. Yeah, okay, so we'll skip a little bit into the actual Magid part. So Vayareyu Osanu, one of the things that we say is that the Vayareyu Osanu, which is the second pasuk, right? We darshan in the four pasukim, I believe. Arami Ovid Avi, we spoke last year about why we chose that, why don't we choose, you know, Parshas Shmos Vayirabo to talk about. Why do we use the pasukim from Arami Ovid Avi, which is said by Bikurim, which was Rav Soloveitchik's explanation about how the whole point of the Seder is for Hakar Satov, Sarhoda, and that's what the Bikurim was. Okay. So the second pasuk is Vayareyu Osanu Hamitzim Vayanunu Vaiknu Alenu Avodah Kasha. That they Vayareyu Osanu doesn't mean that they did bad to us. It means vayareyu osanu, that they made us bad. Right? If it was they did bad to us, it would be like vayaru or vayiru osanu. Not vayareyu osanu. Vayareyu is like a
reflexive.
So it was that they made us bad. What does it mean they made us bad? So Rav Soloveitchik explains that they made us, amongst others, a lot of people say the same word, that they made us look bad. That they didn't just, you know, enslave us, but they started rumors about the Jewish people. That they made us look bad. They started blood libels. They said all these things that everybody around us thought that we were full of evil. And that, and that, that's another level of anti-Semitism. It's not just that they hated us, but they wanted everybody around us to hate us. It wasn't just they wanted to destroy us, but they wanted everybody to think that we were the reason why they hate us. Not because they were worried we would take over, but because we are this evil nation. So they started these terrible rumors about the Jewish people. And Rav Avram Shor, in the Sefer HaLekach VeHaLibuv, in his Haggadah, he writes that not only did they want to make us look bad, but Vayareyu Osanu means that we started to believe that we were bad. Right, taking it one step further. Not just that everybody around us thought we were bad. We were convinced we were bad. And they lost hope. They began to lose hope. And that was the tragedy. And that's what made it so terrible, is that they lost hope because they believed that they were wicked. When a person sees himself in that light, when a person sees himself as full of wickedness, And he believes what everybody was saying about them, then he loses hope. And once hope is lost, then that's the most difficult to get out of a challenge, once you lose hope. Which is why, you know, moving right along. Yeah, I like this word a lot. I don't think I said it last year. B'damai chayim. You know, in the end, right before that, Vayirei Osanu, the pasuk says, Va'omer lach b'damai chayim, Va'omer lach b'damai chayim. So we know it from the bris. B'damai chayim. And we say, B'damai chayim, we understand to mean that with their blood they shall live. Why? Because it was the blood, what blood? The dam pesach and dam milah. Which is why we say it at a bris, because it was with those two mitzvot that the Jewish people performed, the Korban Pesach, and by putting the dam on the doorways, and the dam milah that they gave their children in the bris milah. So it was those two mitzvot that we were given as we were leaving Mitzrayim that the Jewish people fulfilled, and through that they were redeemed. So it's interesting to note that those two mitzvot are the only two positive mitzvot that a person, if he does not do them, is chayv kares, right? Like we spoke about a few weeks ago when we learned about kares, which unfortunately wasn't taped, the whole thing. So those are the two mitzvos I say, that if you don't, if a person doesn't have a milah, and if a person doesn't do a korban pesach, you're chayv kares. Why those two mitzvos? So the B'nai Yisachar has a very beautiful explanation, also based on the Rambam. The Rambam writes that the halacha is that when you acquire a slave, a non-Jewish slave, you have to bring him to the mikvah. Now, when he goes into the mikvah, if he says to himself, I'm going into the mikvah to become a free man, a Jew, right, and use this as my conversion to be free and to be Jewish, he can. Right? So if I acquire a non-Jewish slave and I take him to the mikvah, because when you own a non-Jewish slave, he has to keep certain mitzvahs, so he has to go through a partial gerus. So if he says to himself, I'm not going in to become your slave, I'm going in to be a full-fledged Jew and be a free man, he can. So therefore, the Rambam says, what you have to do is, while he's going into the mikvah, you have to give him a job to do. Right? So that while he's in the mikvah, he's doing something for you. Whatever it is. Right? You tell him to dunk. You know, or you drop something in and say, go pick that up for me, and he dunks. So you give him a job to do while he's in the mikveh. And this way, when he dunks into the mikveh and becomes free, he's serving you. Right? At that moment that he could be going to be completely free, he's serving you and he remains as your slave. Right, that's the halacha. So the Bnei Sasser explains that that's why these two mitzvahs are the most important mitzvahs, I say, in a certain way. Because when we were being when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, it was as though the Jewish people were being told in a mikvah. And we were going from being slaves of Paro, and then we were becoming the slaves of Hashem on the way out. The leaving Mitzrayim was like the mikvah. And if we would have, and so Hashem said, if I don't give you any mitzvahs to do on your way out, you'll just be free. You won't be slaves of Hashem. We won't have the zechus of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem said, I'll give you two mitzvahs so that while you're going into the mikvah on your way out of Mitzrayim, the proverbial mikvah, on your way out of Mitzrayim, then he said, so I'll give you two mitzvahs to do so that while you're in there, you'll be serving me and Hashem will acquire us as slaves.
Then you can say the splitting of the sea was kind of going to the mikvah.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Well, they were dry.
Depends if they got wet.
They're literally going through.
Right. Depends if they got wet. Right.
I'm sure they got some mist on them, you know?
Well, no, because the walls may become hard.
Oh, it was hard.
And the Midrashim say that they got hard, so they didn't actually even get wet. Although a lot of it's fun in Midrashim. Anyway, so the Bnei Sasser says that's why if a person does not fulfill one of these two mitzvos, so the punishment is much worse, because by not fulfilling these two mitzvos, which are the two mitzvos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu acquired the Jewish people in a certain way through these two mitzvos, if you don't perform them, what you're saying is, I wish we didn't get those mitzvos on the way out of Mitzrayim, and I would rather have not had the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Avadim, and therefore the punishment would be Karis, which now we know is the most ultimate form of being lost forever. So that's why those two mitzvos, because those are the two mitzvos that were given on the way out of Mitzrayim, through which Hashem acquired us, that if a person does not fulfill them, it's as though he is disregarding and rebelling against that moment in time. Yeah. There's the famous vort about the famous question that Dayenu. Dayenu is a very interesting part of the Seder, because you can really go through every line of Dayenu and ask the question, or almost every line. Some of them you can understand. But, you know, there's a big question about what Dayenu means. You know, you could ask that, but let's not ask that for now. But there's a big question about, you know, each line we say, if you would have taken us out of Mitzrayim and not done all those miracles, it would have been enough just to get out without the miracles. So, okay, I can understand that. You know, if you would have done just all those miracles but not, you know, did anything to their gods, that would have been okay. So, fine. If you would have done to their gods but not killed their firstborns, fine. You know, we can live with all that. If you would have killed their firstborns and not given us all the money, we can understand that. But there are a few that are, you know, big questions. One of which I'll leave it as a question. If you would have given us all the money, even if you wouldn't have split the sea for us, it would have been enough.
Probably wouldn't have been enough.
What do you mean? What would have happened? If you would have walked out of Mitzrayim with all the riches in the world, but Hashem wouldn't have split the sea, what would the riches have done? Right? They would have just been taken back as slaves, or worse, or killed. So, all right, something to think about. The easy answer is that we're saying if you wouldn't have split the sea, but rather you would have saved us in a different way, less miraculous way. Okay, it's an answer, but it's something to think about. One of the most famous questions that people ask is when we say Ilu Kervanu Misnei Har Sinai V'lo Nasa Lanu Es HaTorah. If you would have brought us to Har Sinai and you would not have given us the Torah, Dayenu, it would have been enough. So, what would have been the value of going to Har Sinai if not to get the Torah? Right? And that would have been enough, that we gained so much at Har Sinai that it would have been enough not to get the Torah. So there are different ways of answering the question. You know, the classic one is because at the foot of Har Sinai, the Jewish people united, and this would be a nice, you know, again, the same theme that we were working off in the beginning, you know, that the Jewish people united to be ki'ish echad b'lev echad, and therefore it was worth it just for that. It's a nice answer. You know, it's a classic answer. And then there's the one that, you know, some call the perfume store, you know, that even if you don't buy anything from the perfume store, you walk out smelling like perfume. So even if you wouldn't have walked away from Har Sinai with anything real, we still would have gained a lot from just being in the presence of such holiness. And then there's another. This another answer is Rabbi Yochanan Levavitz, who was the Mashgiach in the year at some point. But he's well known Baal Musar in his day, in his time, one of the great Baal Musar of his generation. So Rabbi Yochanan says that it's to teach us that the preparations are valuable. That to teach us that it wasn't just that we were brought near Har Sinai. It was that if everything would have happened up until the receiving of the Torah and then would have stopped, it would have been valuable. Because the growth and development of the Jewish people in their preparations to receive the Torah were so worthwhile that even if the result doesn't necessarily come to fruition, the preparations are still worthwhile. And he says it's a yesod for many things, that it's not necessarily about, we believe it's not about the results, it's about the effort and the what a person puts into it, about the process, about what a person walks away with is not necessarily the end result, that the growth that a person goes through the process of trying and putting in the effort is sometimes even greater than what a person walks away with as the result. I'll end with this. There's a Pesach Matzah and Maror. I have to say one thing about Pesach Matzah and Maror, because the Mishnah, the Haggadah says that according to Rabban Gamliel, that anybody who doesn't say these three things doesn't fulfill his requirements. It's a famous question about what requirements. The requirement of telling the story of Egypt, of leaving Egypt, or the requirement of Pesach Matzah and Maror if you don't explain them. But the problem is that they're out of order. Like, chronologically, it should say Maror, Pesach, Matzah. And we say Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So Maror is completely out of order. It should be first, then Pesach, then Matzah. Because first there was the Meru, HaMitzer, Meschaya, Hussein. First there was the slavery. Then there was the Al Shum, Shepasach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Abatei Avosinu B'Mitzrayim, that Hashem passed over our houses in the time of Makas Bechoros. And then at the end there's Matzah, right, that we actually left. So why is it out of order? The Medrash has different explanations. There are different mishalim given in the Medrash. There are about four. I'll mention two. There are different mishalim given in the Medrash about why is it that the Jewish people, while Hashem said that we would be enslaved for 400 years, why is it that we were enslaved only for 210 years? So we discussed that when we talked about Hashgacha and whether man has the ability to affect others in beyond what is decreed upon them by Hashem. We mentioned the Ramban, but there are two basic mishalim that I'll mention. One is that there was a king who told his son that if he does something, he'll be hit 100 times. And the son went ahead and did it. And the father said, the king said, if I hit him 100 times, there's a chance that he'll die. So I have an idea. He says, I'll take the rope that I was going to use to hit him, and I'll fold it 100 times, and then I'll hit him once. This way, it's like I'm hitting him 100 times all at once. It'll be very hard. It'll be worse than had I hit him 100 each time. It will be, the 100 folding is worse. The one time hitting is worse than the 100 singles hits. But still, it'll be one time, and he'll be okay. Then the second mashal is the king who said if this child does something, he's going to throw a boulder onto him. So he said, but if I throw the boulder onto him, I'll die. So he said, I have an idea. I'll break up the boulder and I'll throw it piece by piece. Right? This way, he'll be able to weather the storm better. So the two different, what the Medrash is saying is the two different understandings as to why the Jewish people were let out after 210 years. On the one hand, it could be that because in the 210 years, the hit was so great that it was the equivalent of 400 years. That's what the Ramban basically says. That there were 400 years, it was supposed to be 400 years, but in the 210 years, it was such terrible slavery that it was the equivalent of 400 years. Right? That's like folding up the rope 100 times. That's one way of understanding it. And then the second explanation of the Medrash is that no, the Jewish people were in such a terrible spot, terrible shape, after 210 years, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood that if he leaves them there for any longer, they would be lost forever. I mean, the Midrash is talking about they were on the 50th level of impurity, on the 49th level of impurity, and had they been left in Mitzrayim even for another moment, they would have fallen to the 50th level of purity, and they would have been lost forever. Therefore, Hashem said, let me break up the boulder that's supposed to be the enslavement in Egypt, let me break up the boulder and throw it little by little. So they get the first 210 years, but the last 190 will be little pebbles that will continue over time. So Tzlach, one of the Achronim, he explains that he prefers the latter of the two, and he says, and that's why the Maror is at the end. Because the Maror, Pesach Matzah Maror, tells us that we're still suffering with the Maror. That the Maror that was in the time of Mitzrayim was so terrible that the Jewish people couldn't handle it before the Pesach, before the Matzah completely, and therefore some of the Maror had to be carried over afterwards. And therefore we're still in Golus now. We don't have the complete redemption because the Jewish people couldn't handle it. And that's what the Maror at the end is teaching us, reminding us that we're, even though we're celebrating tonight and we're, you know, enjoying tonight, we're still in Golus. We still haven't reached the final destination yet. And I'll just add, as just a small addition, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes, why is it then it's been a lot more than 190 years, right? It's been a lot more than 190 years. Why is it that we haven't yet been redeemed?
Well, it's like little pebbles. It could be.
Yeah. Okay, so right, that's
well,
one answer.
More.
Yeah, that's not what he said.
Holocaust is
yeah, pretty intense. So, and you could say, yeah, okay, but so that's one way of answering it. The other way, what he says is that because the count only starts when you feel that you're in Golus. When you feel that you're missing something, then the count starts. Then you're in Golus, and this time of 400 years counts. But as long as the Jewish people are comfortable where they are and don't feel as though we're missing anything and don't feel that we're in Golus, then when the count for the years is not continuing. Because we need to feel that we're missing something by not having a Beis HaMikdash. And Baruch Hashem, we live in a very comfortable time, and we have the Medina Shel Chesed of America, and you know, no matter what politically anybody thinks about anybody, still, America is you know, a place of extreme kindness to all religions, and you know, especially ours. And we're appreciative to that, which is like Medina Shel Chesed. But nevertheless, we need to feel that it's even on a night where we celebrate and we sit like kings and we reminisce and we celebrate the past, we still need to feel that we're missing something. That the Korban Pesach, until the Korban Pesach is back at our Seder, it's not a complete Seder, and our lives are not complete lives. And that's why Pesach Matzah Maror is to remind us, that's why the Maror is at the end. Because it's still a continued suffering, still ongoing, and you know, it fits nicely what we started with, that you know, we're still living it, and that the goal is to sing at the end, Lashana Haba Yerushalayim. God, 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 God